McCluskey was a standout track star at the University of Utah who was kind, smart, but inexperienced with men. That all changed when she met a handsome, charismatic, and older part-time computer science student who wooed her with old-fashioned romance. It's not long, though, before this seeming too-good-to-be-true guy is revealed to be not only a master manipulator, but a cold-blooded killer. Hello and welcome to The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, author of suspense novels about the dark side of love, and this week I'm putting a spotlight on the case I'm calling A Cry for Help. Lauren Jennifer McCluskey was born in Berkeley, California, the first child of professors Matt and Jill McCluskey. When she was a little over a year old, the family moved to Pullman, Washington, when her parents accepted faculty positions with Washington State University. Little brother Ryan would join the family a few years later. From the beginning, Lauren was not only athletic, she was an exceedingly talented athlete, scaling walls and trees as a little girl, and eventually discovering her passion for track and field, excelling at the 400-meter dash as well as the high jump and long jump. She competed at the national level, setting and shattering numerous records as a 9 and 10-year-old, so she's a total phenom. Lauren's dominance in track and field continued through high school, where she was a state champion, all while she maintained an exceptional GPA and volunteered for the Special Olympics and a local animal shelter. While numerous colleges and universities across the country clamored to bring her to their campuses, in the end, it was the University of Utah in Salt Lake City that won her hand, granting her a scholarship with the school's women's track and field team. Lauren's parents had no trepidations about sending their daughter to the University of Utah, with her father Matt telling Dateline that, quote, it appeared to be very safe. And the University of Utah seemed like a great choice for Lauren, who wasn't really a drinker, kept a close circle of girlfriends, and didn't have that much experience with boys. She kept her focus on her studies, the track, with very little in between. However, at the start of her senior year, that would all change. Lauren and a girlfriend went to a local bar and restaurant where Lauren caught the eye of the bouncer. He told her his name was Sean Fields, that he was 28, and a part-time computer science student at a local community college. He also said that he had been in the military and had trained as a security officer. There were sparks, they vibed, and when Sean asked Lauren for her number, she gave it to him. Sean was so smitten, he didn't play any waiting games with her, texting Lauren the next morning, asking her for a date that afternoon. According to what her mom Jill told Dateline, everything that Lauren was telling her about Sean sounded somewhat old-fashioned, as Sean seemed to be wooing her daughter with dinner dates and other romantic outings. Despite this seeming quaint courtship, the truth is, Lauren and Sean were moving pretty fast, becoming exclusive within a week and a half. Still, to her dad, Matt, his daughter, quote, clearly seemed very happy, according to what he told Dateline. Now, Lauren may have been head over heels with Sean, but her friends were not. To them, Sean displayed all of the classic examples of a toxic, bad, garbage boyfriend. He wanted Lauren to be available all the time, wanting, for example, for her to stay up until 2 in the morning until he was off of work and then come pick him up, never mind that she had class in the morning. Sean was needy, controlling, and jealous of the time that she spent with other people. If she said she was hanging out with friends, he would demand she take photos of who she was with, I'm guessing so he could see if there were any guys in the picture. And if he got mad at her about something, she would blame herself for letting him down. Predictably, Sean is glued to Lauren's hip, going in and out of her dorm all hours of the day and night with no key card because people knew him, because he was there all the time, so he just got waved in and nobody stopped him. However, Lauren is starting to feel smothered by this constant togetherness. Understandable. Also remember that Lauren, she was not all that experienced with guys, so she took Sean's possessiveness as protectiveness. She thought that by giving in to what he wanted, cooperating with what he demanded of her, that would make him trust her all the more. But then Sean takes things a little too far when he tells Lauren that he wants her to have a gun for protection, which, it's a college campus. What does she need protection from? Now, you could apparently, on University of Utah campus, you could conceal carry, but you needed a permit, and just the whole thing, it's not right. It's weird. It's a big red flag. And so Lauren's resident assistant, Diamond, reported this to her supervisor at the campus housing department, but she says that it was blown off, treated like it was no big whoop, like, oh, you know, we hear about these kinds of things all the time, and it's fine. What's the problem? You know, we don't need to deal with this. So if Lauren's friends didn't like Sean before, now they're afraid of him. Sean is 6'3", 190 pounds, so he's a big dude. And he just towers over the petite Lauren. And he's walking around talking about guns. So, yeah, there's a lot to be afraid of here. And despite all of these red flags, despite her friends trying to break through to her about what Sean was doing and how it wasn't love, Lauren was determined to stick with him. Until the day she found out some staggering truths about her boyfriend that were just too horrifying to ignore. So she's in her dorm room one day, and she got a look at his ID and got a huge shock. While the picture was of her boyfriend, the name was different. He wasn't Sean Fields, but rather Melvin Rowland. And he wasn't 28, like he told her, but 37 to her 20, 17 years older than she was, pushing 40 and hanging out on college campuses. So this is bad, of course. It's really bad, and so it can't get much worse, right? Oh no, it can, and it did, because Lauren Googles the name Melvin Rowland to see what she can find out about this guy. Well, it turns out that Melvin Rowland is a registered sex offender, convicted of enticing a minor over the internet and forcible sexual abuse. So Melvin, as we'll now refer to him, Melvin was born in New York and was adopted by an older couple. However, when they died, he was placed in a group home. He attended high school in Boulder, Colorado, before notching 2 years at Salt Lake County Community College. So Lauren's head has just got to be spinning, predictably, at all of this. And she's realizing, you know what, I got to cut the cord with this guy. So he shows up to her dorm, and she confronts him about what she has found out about him. And he, you know, does like a shaggy, wasn't me. He says to her he's being set up. It's not true. I mean, it's just nonsense what he's saying. Total nonsense. And he also refuses to leave. And as Lauren's friend Alex told Dateline, Melvin was, quote, 4 to 5 times Lauren's size. So this makes it impossible for her to get away from him. So she's trapped in this room with Melvin. It's not until the next morning that he finally leaves, and he takes Lauren's car with her permission, because she just wanted him to leave, promising it was whatever, just please go. And the agreement was that he would leave the car at some far-flung parking lot on campus for her to pick up later. Now Lauren's mom, Jill, when she hears this, she says, you are absolutely not to go over there alone to pick up your car, because who knows what this guy will do. So Jill calls campus security and explains the situation, including the fact that Melvin lied about his identity and his age, and that he was a registered sex offender. So this is the first kind of unofficially official record of sorts with campus security that this guy was a fact of life. Campus security sends an escort with Lauren to get her car. It all goes smoothly, and it seems like, okay, everything is going to be fine. Except that's not what happened. Melvin unleashes a campaign of terror on Lauren via a string of harassing text messages. She's getting these messages from friends, quote unquote, of Melvin's, which it's Melvin because he's the one masquerading as all these people, because guys like him, they don't have friends. They have acquaintances or associates or buddies, cellmates, but they don't have friends. Anyway, Melvin, pretending to be his imaginary friends, he sends Lauren a bunch of messages along the lines of, quote, why would you do this to the big guy? Oh, he's so upset. How could you do this? And then the messages escalate into, quite frankly, absurd territory, because now these imaginary friends are claiming that, oh, Melvin has been in a horrible accident. Now he's at the hospital and, oh, lights out, he's dead. And oh, are you coming to Melvin's funeral? Lauren doesn't fall for this obvious ploy to lure her God knows where and bluntly texts back that she knows Melvin is alive, leave me alone, and by the way, I've got the cops involved. And indeed, Lauren had gone to campus security to let them know that this guy is harassing me and he's trying to get me alone somewhere. Campus security's response is to basically shrug its shoulders and say, nothing we can do about it. They claimed it wasn't a direct enough threat, therefore, no action required on their part. Well, Melvin does make a direct threat to Lauren by letting her know that unless she paid him $1,000, he was going to release explicit photographs that he took of her during their time together. Now, this is extortion. Extortion is illegal. Even my pea brain understands this. But it doesn't seem as though campus security grasped this concept. Now, Lauren paid the money because, understandably, she was scared. She didn't want her parents or her friends or anybody, you know, like future employers, seeing these pictures. You know, she did what a lot of people would do. However, she did tell campus security about what had happened. And according to what Lauren's friend Alex told Dateline, campus security's response was, it's a scam. A scam. They told Lauren, well, his phone was probably hacked, like it's a Nigerian prince stranded in Dubuque or something. And Lauren's friend Alex asserted to Dateline that campus security treated them as though they were overreacting. You know, I'm sure they were being made to feel like they were hysterical females, right? Campus security advised Lauren to cancel the transaction, go to her bank, deal with the bank, and well, that's about all we can do about it, which is essentially nothing. And critically, campus security decides that Lauren and Melvin are the victims because they decide, for whatever reason, that his phone was hacked. See, he's suffering too. It is shameful. So they are completely letting Melvin off the hook. They are really, to be honest, they're treating this like it's a spat between exes, like silly games between two kids. Well, first of all, Melvin is not a kid, so that's one blindingly red flag that they are blatantly ignoring. And this is the part that just seemed to get completely missed. Melvin is a registered sex offender. Lauren's mom, Jill, told campus security this fact. And again, this is a fact, not her feeling. You have a registered sex offender harassing one of the students you've been sworn to protect, coming and going from your campus at will. How on earth did no one in campus security say, you know, because he is a registered sex offender, maybe we ought to check this guy out because you know what, there's a chance he might be on probation. Well, apparently they did check him out. They did find this out, but they didn't do anything about it. They did nothing. Oh, and one more thing. Remember this. He had tried to give Lauren a gun, which is a direct violation of probation. There's no confusion about this. You go to jail, you do not pass go, you do not collect $200. And remember that the housing department knew about this incident with the gun and did nothing. This should have been a slam dunk. And nobody did anything. Now, I know a lot of times I say, make this make sense. Well, I can't make any of this make sense because apparently in this particular situation, one and one add up to three. So, in early October, A desperate and scared and frankly brave Lauren ultimately shared the embarrassing photos at the request of Officer Miguel Duras, sending them to his personal cell phone. She hoped this would prompt campus security to do something, that something specifically being arrest Melvin. They promised that they will get back to her within the next 3 days. Radio silence. Lauren decides enough is enough and takes the step of calling Salt Lake City Police, again hoping to make something happen, move the needle in some way. Unfortunately, Salt Lake PD didn't have the jurisdiction over the University of Utah's campus, so they kicked it back to campus security, which at this point, it's like calling a disconnected phone number for all the help that they're giving her. It's like useless. And in the meantime, Melvin continues to harass Lauren. At one point, sending her a text message asking, quote, "What did you tell the cops?" Then for good measure, as if trying to scare her, says, quote, "We know everything." Once again, Lauren bypasses campus security and calls Salt Lake City cops directly, who one more time send her back to campus security. Then she receives a message from someone claiming to be from campus security requesting that she meet them somewhere to discuss her case. Scared, Lauren calls campus security to report this and again is ignored, basically told, it's just somebody playing a joke on you, don't go, it's a prank, just stay home. Time and time and time again, Lauren's completely valid fears were minimized, blown off, ignored 1,000%. Campus security did absolutely nothing to help her. October 22nd, 2018. Lauren is coming back to her dorm from an evening class. What she doesn't know is that Melvin is there, and he's been waiting for her all day, hours and hours. Security cameras show him stalking the entryway of her dorm, laying in wait as he clutches a black pouch in one hand. Lauren was on the phone with her mom, Jill. The next thing Jill heard were the horrifying screams of her daughter, followed by the phone being knocked to the ground. Jill could actually hear Lauren being attacked from the other end of the phone, could hear her daughter yelling, "No, no, no." There was no doubt in Jill's mind. It was Melvin. Lauren's father, Matt, immediately called Salt Lake PD to report that his daughter had been attacked and kidnapped. Then, there were reports of shots fired and a student killed. And that's what it took for cops to finally spring into action. They flooded campus, cordoning off the area around Lauren's dorm as they searched for her. They would find her in the back seat of a car that Melvin had borrowed from a buddy of his. A red and black Deadpool mask inside, and a bag of ammunition on the roof. She'd been shot 7 times. Lauren McCluskey was 21 years old. Cops scoured campus searching for Melvin. As the Salt Lake Tribune reported, they searched Lauren's dorm, tore apart campus buildings, scrutinized the surveillance tape, searching for a clue. They finally spotted him on camera fleeing campus using TRAX, which is the light rail system in Salt Lake City. They even pinged his cell phone in an attempt to pinpoint his location. So what had happened is that Melvin had a woman that he'd met on a dating app pick him up from the train station. Now, he had told her that his name was Apollo Santos. The two went for dinner, as one does after killing a girl in cold blood. And as the Salt Lake Tribune reported, they went back to her place where Melvin took a shower and drank a cup of coffee. Now this woman, she starts to get campus alerts and Twitter updates with Melvin's picture, and she's like, oh boy, who have I let in here? He freaks out and he flees. She calls the cops. And they would find Melvin Roland, the cops, at Trinity African Methodist Episcopal Church. Dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Now, of course, that Lauren has been savagely murdered and Melvin is dead, now cops want to know all about Melvin. Now they want to know about him. So Melvin had been in jail for 10 years, and he'd been paroled and sent back to jail twice. As the Salt Lake Tribune reported, Melvin sat through 5 parole hearings, and in one of them, freely admitted to using his, quote, manipulation tactics to get what he wanted. The paper noted that the parole hearings and court records demonstrate that Melvin's, quote, admitted violence toward women was minimized within Utah's criminal justice system. During the 6 years Roland was moving in and out of prison, officials' focus was more often on the parole rules he had broken than the risk his violations posed, and he was released after each transgression. In further interviews with ex-girlfriends, the Salt Lake Tribune noted the emergence of some common themes. He's a master manipulator, frequently lying about his name, his age, his background, everything from having served in Afghanistan to he played basketball for the University of Utah and that he had a career in IT. All lies. Every single one, because we know where Melvin was. As investigators continue searching for answers, it becomes embarrassingly obvious just how badly this was handled. I guess one way you could look at it is that campus security was just in over its head, and as a result, you know, they didn't know what to do. Listen, they're probably used to breaking up frat parties and ticketing illegally parked cars, and a situation like this is just, it's out of their league. As former investigative reporter Debbie Dujanovic told Dateline, which I think is spot on and closer to the truth, quote, in this case, the University of Utah was not equipped with the detectives that had the know-how and the knowledge to investigate a case like this. She went on to say that the department lacked a, quote, culture of knowledge of how to investigate crimes that are happening against women. They didn't know what they were doing and kind of didn't care that they didn't know what they were doing. Predictably, after a barrage of questions about why and how, campus security basically says, okay, well, sure, yeah, he was extorting her, but she never told us that he was threatening her physically. Okay, so again, extortion is against the law. And sextortion, which is blackmailing someone by threatening them with sexual images or information, is a crime in the state of Utah. It's a felony, in fact. So for campus security to come out and say, oh, we had no idea, this is garbage. Absolute garbage, because of course they knew. Multiple times, Lauren point blank said, I am scared. He's trying to lure me off campus. He's threatening me. He's extorting money from me. Campus security even provided her an escort to her car because of him. Multiple times, she reported to them, he's trying to get at me. Like, did they think that he was trying to get her to come outside and play hopscotch? I mean, seriously. Well, the University of Utah launched an investigation into how Lauren's case was handled, which resulted in 30 recommendations for improvements across campus. Despite this, the university's president at the time, Ruth Watkins, said, and I quote, the report does not offer any reason to believe this tragedy could have been prevented. Wow. Tone, meet death. Like, did she read the report? Kind of makes me think maybe she didn't. Maybe she only read the intro. And in perhaps one of the most sickening aspects of this case to come to light after the fact, as if Lauren hadn't been let down enough, it was later discovered that Officer Miguel Duras, the one who gave Lauren his personal phone number, who asked her to send him those explicit photos that she was terrified of getting out, that he said was for evidence in her case. Well, for one, he never investigated a single thing that she reported, nothing. But he had all kinds of time to leer at these photos of Lauren. Because, well, and this is where it gets even worse, He showed them off to his fellow officers, bragging that he could, quote, look at them whenever he wants. Oh, but worse. As the Salt Lake Tribune reported, Officer DeRoss showed a sergeant, someone higher in rank than him, one of those pictures at the crime scene on the night of the murder. After this sergeant, a superior, said, I wonder what she looked like. Nobody reported this officer for doing this. Nobody. They all stayed silent. And then his lawyer, Officer DeRoss's lawyer, had the gall to say that him showing these photos was, quote, for the sole purpose of providing context for identifying Lauren. He also said, well, you know, he was also asking how to upload the images to the police database. Now, the guy had worked for campus security for 3 years at that point. He knew how to upload a dang photo to the police database. And as it turns out, Officer DeRoss, he had a copy of Lauren's driver's license on that same phone. So, yeah, he could have showed that, but no. That was not the choice that he made. And unbelievably, there were no charges filed against this guy, with the DA saying that there just wasn't any precedent in the law to do so. Officer DeRoss quit campus security before later filing, of course he did, a $10 million lawsuit, along with four other officers involved in the case, claiming that the university did little to protect his reputation after the details of his conduct were revealed. I mean, maybe don't act like a douche. I don't know. Just a thought. As the Daily Utah Chronicle, which is the newspaper, campus newspaper for the University of Utah, noted in a scorching editorial, DeRoss and his fellow complainants were, quote, asking for money from the very students they failed to protect. He later took a job with another police department in Utah, but when all of this came out about what he had done, he was fired. As cops continued digging into Melvin's past and his actions in the days leading up to Lauren's murder, according to the Salt Lake Tribune, Melvin was in a panic about having extorted money for Lauren, realizing, unlike campus security, that he could be sent back to jail, confessing to an acquaintance, quote, I messed up, and that he was allegedly fixating on how much time he would get for breaking the law. He'd been in jail before, and as he told his buddies, he wasn't going back. The Salt Lake Tribune also reported that investigators learned after searching Lauren's laptop and phone that Melvin had managed to access her computer and could manipulate the webcam on the computer. And this part, I mean, this is just laughable to me, but when he was extorting the money from her, he borrowed the Venmo account of someone that he worked with so that she wouldn't be able to trace it to him, but that wouldn't have been too many steps to connect those dots. If campus security had done their job, they could have found that out. Melvin essentially rented a gun. This was the murder weapon from a buddy of his for $400. With the plans to return it in a couple of days. He told this buddy that he needed the gun to take his girlfriend to the shooting range. And remember, because Melvin was a convicted felon, he's on probation, he is not allowed to buy or possess a gun for himself. So he rented a gun from this guy that he knew. Lauren's parents sued the university, eventually settling with them for $10 million. And Ruth Watkins, the university president, who basically held up her hands and said nothing we could do, had to later tuck her tail between her legs and admit that the school had failed Lauren multiple times in multiple ways. The McCluskeys established Lauren's Promise, which represents a vow that anyone can take to be a safe haven for sharing incidents of sexual assault, domestic violence, or stalking. The promise is as follows. I will listen and believe you if someone is threatening you. If you or someone you know is the victim of domestic violence, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 1-800-799-7233. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, and show your love for The Dark Side of Love by visiting thedarksideoflove.com for show notes and transcripts. While you're there, sign up for my newsletter to be notified about new episodes. You can also find a link to my Patreon page where you can access bonus material and other fun stuff. Learn more about my suspense novels about The Dark Side of Love by visiting biancasloan.com. Thanks for hanging out with me, and join me next time for another tale of love gone wrong. I'll see you on the dark side.